Chapter 20. Preparations. Janice woke up to the sounds of Stavius rummaging around the small shed in which they had spent the night.
"What in the name of Luna are you looking for?" he grumbled.
"I'm looking for an old leather case that used to be in here, if you must know. It would be perfect for carrying the horns."
"Go back to sleep," Stavius replied.
"I'd love to, but that would imply that I had been sleeping. I don't think that happened very much last night in these luxury accommodations," Janice complained. "I couldn't decide whether wrapping myself around this barrel was better or worse than folding myself between these two chairs. It's too bad your parents didn't have any spare rooms in that big house of theirs. I assume they are hosting out-of-town guests."
"Janice, stop whining. You're easily 6 inches shorter than me, and you don't hear me moaning and groaning about the uncomfortable position in which I had to sleep last night. And no, I doubt that my parents' 6 bedrooms were occupied. They don't encourage house guests."
"Man, your family is messed," sighed Janice. "I always felt sorry for myself for being an orphan, but maybe I need to reconsider. Well, at least we are dry, and since I'm up, I may as well help you look."
Janice reached over and pulled a yard-long leather cylinder with a removable cap on one end from under the table next to him.
"Is this what you wanted?"
"Darn it, Janice," groaned Stavius. "How long have you known that was there?"
"I don't know. Ever since sometime in the middle of the night when I tried to use it as a pillow," grinned Janice. "It doesn't work as well as you might think, though." Stavius grabbed the container from Janice and opened it up. It was used for carrying rolled-up documents or paintings, but was empty now. Stavius slid the 2 unicorn horns inside and closed the top. He asked Janice to elude a sticker with Lars's logos on it across the cap to make it appear as though it was securely sealed. Janice complied, but just made the arrows point a little off north and a little off south, since he didn't know where Lars's studios were.
"That's good enough," Stavius said. "It just needs to look real at the bridge checkpoint, and I'm hoping that they aren't blocking illusions since they've already captured the terrorists."
Stavius then gave Janice the money pouch to acquire the objects Janice needed for his part of the plan. They said their goodbyes, and Stavius promised to return before nightfall as he left to recharge the horns. He was not looking forward to his day. It was late September in Septumculus, and there was a refreshing, brisk Christmas in the air. The trees were just starting to brighten into their fall colors, and yesterday's rain had washed away the summer's humidity and oppressive heat for a while. The early morning sky was a clear, pale blue, and Stavius broke into a cheerful trot down the hill towards the bridge, almost forgetting about his dreaded assignment. Safe's sister Bellatrix lived on top of a hill on the other side of Septumculus River. Hers was the closest dragon's nest to the city, and Safe felt she was also the most likely to be willing to help. While dragons live in small flocks near each other, they tend to be rather solitary creatures. Most tend to avoid contact with each other except for the rare times when they mate. They bury their fertilized eggs and leave them untended for decades until their babies are ready to hatch. And when their babies are born, the parents will remain close enough to guard them and to drop food to them from the sky, but most rarely visit their children. Bellatrix was mated with a dragon named Rigel, but he lived farther away and didn't like Safe very much. The feeling was mutual, and Safe hadn't seen him for decades before she was captured. She doubted that they even realized she was gone. The only other dragon in the area was a male dragon named Betel, but Safe warned Stavius to avoid him. Not only would Betel be unlikely to help, he would most likely try to kill anyone who approached. The journey to Beatrix's cave would take nearly 2 hours, so Stavius left early but was then stuck waiting at the bridge until the guards finally showed up to open the gate. The worst part about the wait was that no shops were open, which meant he couldn't get breakfast. Once they arrived, the guards didn't care about anyone leaving the city, and Stavius hurried across the long, sweeping bridge. He turned right down a path which followed the river rather than heading straight down the road through the cotton fields to Clothden. It was a pretty walk along the edge of the vast cotton fields to the south, with a broad, muddy river flowing on his right. Eventually, the broad river valley narrowed, and the cotton fields gave way to steep hills. The path he had been following continued to curve around the edge of the fields, but he needed to proceed farther along the river before climbing the tall hill rising on his left. He found a small game trail and followed it around the mountain and partway up the narrow valley on the far side before starting to climb the slope. There were no trails up the hill, so Stavius used his sword to hack his way through the underbrush to create his own. He found his desire to give up, turn around, and go home increasing with every step. Climbing the hill was tiring, and his doubts about succeeding in convincing a dragon to help him increased with every step. He expected a wave of relief when he finally hacked through the undergrowth and stepped out into a small clearing, but his uneasy feelings only increased. There was no dragon here, and there hadn't been one in years. Stavius could tell that there had once been a dragon cave carved into the hillside, but it had either collapsed or been filled in a long time ago. Vines, creepers, and wildflowers grew over the dirt and rocks mounded in front of the cave mouth. Stavius tried calling for Bellatrix a few times, but he knew it was pointless. More than that, he couldn't shake the feeling that he was being watched. There might not be a dragon here, but other dangerous creatures were living in these woods. A shiver ran down his back as he remembered the trolls he encountered so many months ago, and of course, the werewolves. Stavius spent a few minutes poking around the formal dragon nest, but his feeling of dread and danger kept increasing by the minute. He finally gave up and scrambled down the hill so quickly he stumbled, scraped, and bruised himself repeatedly by the time he reached the bottom. Stavius ran back down the game trail for several hundred yards before stopping in a small meadow. He was out of breath, his heart was racing, and he had no idea what had scared him so badly. He had hunted dragons, fought trolls, and battled with werewolves, and never felt fear like this. He was curious as to what had spooked him, but he was mostly glad he had escaped. Now, however, he needed to figure out what to do. Stavius pulled out the map Janice had drawn from the aerial images Safe had mentally shared with them. Each dragon's nest was highlighted with an X. Rigel's nest was so far to the east that he would never make it there and back in time. The only possibility was the dragon named Betel, who Safe warned against visiting at all costs. Stavius put the map down and sighed. Betel's nest was an hour journey southwest if there were roads or decent trails. It could easily take two if there were no roads. Recharging the horns to free Safe so that she could aid in their escape was by far their best plan. However, they would inevitably fail if he didn't make it back before the ceremony. He could admit defeat and turn back now and still have some sort of chance to free the girls, if not Safe. Stavius stared at the map for several more minutes before sighing and stuffing it into his pack. He went west on his game trail, muttering, "Go big or go home." He wondered why Safe was so dead set against him visiting Betel. There were no trails to speak of in the southwestern wilds of the Septumgulus Magic Pool, so Stavius didn't reach the base of Betel's Hill until mid-afternoon. He wished he had turned around earlier, but was now committed. There was no way he would make it back to the bridge before it closed, which meant that he could not make it back before tomorrow morning with or without charged unicorn horns. His feelings of fear and dread returned as he began climbing the hill. Once again, every fiber of his mind and body was screaming to turn and flee. These were not normal feelings for him, and he finally concluded that someone, or something, was broadcasting these emotions to deter unwanted guests. Perhaps these dragons had emphatic magic similar to unicorns and vampires. Once he realized what was happening, Stavius found it easier to ignore these emotions, and they had almost entirely dissipated by the time he reached the clearing near the top. This time, however, the area wasn't deserted. He had yet to see the dragon, but Stavius' years as a dragon hunter confirmed that this was an active nest. Stavius stepped out of the forest and cautiously walked a few yards into the clearing. The area was far neater than most dragon nests he had seen. There was a dense hedge of pine trees blocking the forest with wildflowers and even wild roses growing in the field. It would be a lovely place for a picnic, except for the dragon living in the large opening bored into the hill a few yards away, of course. Stavius took a deep breath, steeled himself, and suddenly realized he had no idea how to get the dragon's attention safely. After all, what do you say when unexpectedly calling on a dragon? He kicked himself for not attempting to figure out what to say in advance, and, in the end, he just yelled, "Hey, Betel, are you in there?" He decided in retrospect that he probably should have tried a slightly friendly approach when a dragon's head suddenly emerged from the cave and spat a stream of fire directly at him without warning. Betel's head was at least as large as Safe's, and Stavius barely had time to throw up a magical shield before the flames struck him. Stavius dropped to one knee, crossed his arms, and raised his shield as soon as the dragon's head appeared. He saw the flaming orange stream erupt out of Betel's mouth, but quickly closed his eyes and kept them clamped shut until the blast ended. He felt the energy strike his barrier, but although it rumbled and shook his entire body, it didn't burn him. He opened his eyes and was immediately thankful that he could, at least, do this crude type of magic.
The ground was scorched in front and on either side of him.
Flames were crackling on the bushes and plants surrounding him. In fact, he seemed to be standing in a V-shaped island of green in the center of a sizable, smoldering sea of soot.
"You idiot!" roared a deep voice in his mind. "Look at what you've done to my garden!"
"Wait, that wasn't me," thought Stavius. "You're the one who blasted me with fire."
"Yeah, and it should have vaporized you while leaving at most one small scorch mark on my lawn," the dragon screamed in Stavius's mind. "You're the one who splattered it all over the place. Just look at my beautiful pines. Those took years to grow in, and oh my, you hit one of my precious maples. I was so looking forward to watching their leaves turn brilliant yellows and reds in a few weeks."
"Well, their leaves are yellow and red right now," offered Stavius.
"Ha, ha, ha," said the dragon. "You do know that I could just come out and stomp on you, right? Why are you here disturbing me, and how are you managing to speak to me at all?"
"The unicorns taught me how to speak through my mind, and as it happens, I've come to ask if you could help me recharge a couple of unicorn horns," thought Stavius.
"Unicorns don't usually part with their horns," thought Bettle. "They're pretty attached to them, if you know what I mean."
"Well, they willingly gave me a couple they were no longer using," said Stavius. "But that's a long story, and I'm in a bit of a rush. Safe said you might be able to help."
"Safe? Do I know a Safe?"
the dragon asked himself aloud.
"Nope, that name doesn't ring a bell. I'm afraid that I can't help you."
"Oh no, my roses! You've torched my beautiful roses, you nasty boy! Is that why Safe sent you? I can't believe she's still angry after all this time."
"Hey, I didn't roast your roses. That was all your doing," answered Stavius. "And I thought you said you didn't know Safe."
"Well, I don't. I thought I did, but I was obviously mistaken. Safe and I went on one date, and then she was gone without so much as a goodbye."
You do know that...
"I mean, it was like, food screwed, thank you, dude, and she split. I thought we really connected. We had a great time, we fertilized and buried 3 eggs up in the hills, but then I make one little comment when we get back to her place, and boom, it's all over."
"You know, something might have come up that..."
"Oh yeah, something came up all right, and his name is Ceres. He was her old boyfriend. She was always talking about Ceres does this and Ceres does that and Ceres never complains about my nest being messy. Honestly, though, it was a disaster area. She had rocks and tree trunks and half-eaten carcasses lying around. So I told her it was a mess. It wasn't a lie. I was being honest. Is that so wrong?"
No, but you see, Safe is gorgeous and she knows it. She struts herself around waving that big tail of hers right and left and left and right. Oh man, I can't resist a great tail. You know what I mean? Actually, she's not really my type, but yeah, keep telling yourself that. But the truth is that she just isn't into you. I mean, look at you. You're puny and weak and you're not even a dragon. But you do have that battle magic thing and she loves that kind of stuff. I'm telling you, though, she'll always compare you to Ceres. You know she makes him sound so perfect that I don't even think he's real. Do you?
"Bettle, you've been living here all alone for a long, long time, haven't you?" asked Stavius.
"Call me Juice," thought the dragon. "But yeah, I've been here for a few years. However, if you knew anything about dragons, you'd know that we're solitary creatures. Besides, I could get a date anytime I want. I'm happy just sitting here looking at my garden. Or at least I was until you destroyed it."
"Juice?" asked Stavius. "Really?"
"Yes, it's a nickname I picked up as a kid," answered Bettle with indignation. "I think it sounds more exciting and dangerous than Bettle, don't you agree?"
"I'm just not going to go there, Juice," answered Stavius as he struggled not to laugh while saying it.
"You know, it's funny, Juice," Stavius said, hoping to change the subject, "but Safe seems to think that she's been locked in a cage for 100 years.
"Oh, don't be ridiculous. I'm the one trapped, not her. I remember starting my garden and planting those maple trees right after she left, not more than 5 or 10 years ago," said Bettle.
"You mean those huge 100-year-old maple trees behind the pines?" asked Stavius in disbelief.
"Yes, those are the ones," answered Bettle.
"I guess you're right. Time does kind of slip by, doesn't it? By the way, what do you mean locked in a cage?" It took Stavius nearly an hour to explain Safe's situation to Juice and to make his request. The big dragon seemed to have the attention span of a gnat about everything other than his garden and his failed romance with Safe. Stavius was continually guiding the conversation back on track and reminding Bettle what they were discussing. Eventually, though, Bettle agreed to let Stavius recharge his horns. Bettel led Stavius into his cave and showed him his nest. It was immaculate. Bettel proudly explained how he blasted the entire interior every morning to incinerate any leaves, insects, or other unwanted materials which had blown or wandered inside before using his powerful breath to blow the ash out of his cave. He was incredibly proud of his nest and his now ruined garden. Dragons are experts at finding magical energy springs and build their nests on top of them. But dragons don't merely absorb magical energy like most other creatures. They actually draw the power from the ground like a pump, causing it to flow over their nests. Dragons spend much of their time resting in their nests, absorbing this energy. Bettel had taken nesting to the next level. Dragon nests can be constructed from sticks and branches, but dragons love shiny objects. Swords, gold, silver, and jewels are their preferred nesting materials. Bettel's nest, by comparison, was nothing less than a large circle of neatly stacked dragon stones. He had, in effect, created a 3-foot-deep pool large enough for him to soak. The dragon stones emanated a warm red glow, and while Stavius could not actually see the magical energy, the atmosphere inside the pool was shimmering like heat off of a hot road in summer.
"Go ahead and drop them in," said Bettel. "They should be fully recharged within a few hours. May I offer you something to eat?"
Stavius was famished, but he doubted he would want anything Bettel had to offer and did not want to offend his host. Spending several hours socializing with this crazy dragon when he needed to get back was going to be pure torture.
"No, I'm good, but you go right ahead."
"Oh, thank you," said Bettel as he pulled out a half-eaten sheep which had been discreetly stored behind a large rock. "I am such a slave to my afternoon snack time. Tell me about yourself. What do you do for a living?"
The sun was hanging low in the sky when Bettel determined that the horns were fully charged. Stavius knew that he would not make it to the bridge before it closed at dusk.
"Soup's up," Bettel cheerfully sang as he withdrew them from the pool.
"Ooh, these are simply gorgeous. Do you think I could have one?"
he asked with a disturbing amount of envy.
He was right about how they looked. They had been glowing beautiful dark red and orange hues when Queen Esthera had gifted them to the boys, but had quickly become a dull, grayish, tannish bone color after being drained. Now, however, they were spectacular. One was a deep blue with thin lines of yellow and red spiraling from its base to its point. The other emitted a rainbow of colors which shifted and swirled as Stavius turned it in his hand. Both sparkled while tiny white pinpoints of light occasionally floated off like motes of dust or snowflakes. Bettel only agreed to part with them after Stavius convinced him that both horns were needed to free Safe. He was apparently unhappy about letting the boy leave with these wonderfully sparkly things.
Stavius asked if Bettel would give him a ride partway to the city, but the dragon refused as he sulked in his pool.
Stavius quickly said his goodbyes and left before Bettel could change his mind about the horns. It was late, and it was going to be a long walk back. Night had fallen by the time Stavius reached the cotton fields, so he walked to Clothden instead of to the bridge. He hadn't eaten all day, but while the large dinner he ate at the small roadside restaurant filled his belly, it did not improve his mood. Tomorrow was going to be a big day, and he was going to arrive with little time to spare. He was relieved to have the horns, and hoped his friend had also been successful with his preparations. Stavius wiped his mouth, paid his bill, and left the restaurant. Tonight he would sleep under the stars in the cotton field. Tomorrow night he would be sleeping in his own bed, if all went well. Clarice's Shed, Mirth. Janus smiled as he looked at the 6 wooden staves he had found while rummaging through the shed. These might be lousy accommodations, but the contents were proving to be useful. Stavius was off on a quest to recharge the unicorn horns.
They had argued about it, but Stavius was insistent upon going.
He had been bossier over the past few weeks, which Janus found annoying. Sure, he was older, but Janus was a much more powerful magician, and, to be frank, Janus felt that he was also smarter than Stavius. Losing an argument to Stavius made him angry, but today he also felt lonely. Loneliness was an unusual emotion for Janus. Well, it wasn't entirely true. Janus had spent his entire life as an outsider with few friends and was used to the constant, low-level, dull ache of loneliness. But it wasn't an emotion demanding attention. He suddenly realized that the new form of it he felt was related to missing someone.
He missed Stavius, and he couldn't remember feeling that way ever before.
Janus shook these thoughts out of his head. He had a lot to do today and had no time to sit and feel sorry for himself.
Janice spent the entire morning at Admion Castle, learning its layout and studying the Spear of Mars.
He never spent more than 20 minutes at a time in the castle before leaving, eluding himself with a different appearance, and returning as someone else. By lunchtime, he had bought a brochure with high-quality images of all the talismans, memorized every detail of the Spear of Mars, and mentally noted the faces of several kids who were playing outside. He eluded himself to look like a festival promoter and told them to meet him in the castle courtyard tomorrow morning if they wanted to be a secret, surprise part of the festivities. They weren't sure at first, but agreed after he promised them 6 spectacular gifts if they played their roles well. He then had a quick lunch and went back to the shed to create his props. He needed to transform those 6 staves into 6 copies of the Spear of Mars, nearly indistinguishable from the original. He began by enhancing a wooden stave to look and feel like Dragonstone. He then overlaid an exact image of the real spear on top of it. Illusions were usually the last step in magical transformations, but Janice needed the spears to feel and look real. He then carefully etched each illuded bump, groove, and carving into the staff to exactly match the illusion, and enchanted the spear to vibrate slightly along with a secondary illusion of a crackling magical glow. Creating all 6 copies took several hours, and it was past dinner time before he was done. Janice realized how hungry, drained, and exhausted he was as he leaned the last spear along the wall. They looked spectacular, but there was one final task needed to get them ready. He raised his hands and concentrated with all his mental and magical strength. The row of full-size replica spears shrunk to less than 1 foot in length and now looked like beautiful and expensive souvenirs rather than forgeries. Small trinkets would be much easier to carry discreetly. Janice stuffed the 6 small spears into a sack and tucked it behind a barrel. The boy was prepared for tomorrow and ready for dinner.
He wondered whether Stavius had succeeded in recharging the horns, but decided he was too hungry to wait for him.
However, his anxiousness became a genuine concern after dinner when he realized Stavius wasn't going to make it home that night. Janice eventually went to bed, but suffered through another night of fitful sleep. He was mad at Stavius again for insisting on trying to recharge the horns.
He was anxious about their plans working because his stubborn friend didn't return as he promised, and they had not made any plans for alternative meeting places.
But his annoyance turned to fear for his friend as the night wore on. Walking up to a wild dragon's lair was foolish and dangerous, even though Stavius claimed to be an expert dragon hunter. What if he wasn't coming back in time? What if he couldn't come back at all?